All right. This is a first, the first of what I expect will be 2.5 to 3, depending on how things go. On the topic of Mavar Al Daas Baal HaBayis, which is a sugya that is found on Ayin Tesem and Aleph Amud Beis, 78a/b. And the issue of two parties. One is the owner of an object, the other is the recipient of that object, sometimes by renting it, sometimes by borrowing it, sometimes by receiving it as a gift. And in all of those cases, the question of what the rights of this renter, borrower, or recipient are in terms of use of the item. What if he uses the item in a way that the original owner is not good with? So this comes up first in source Aleph on the sheets, and we're going to go through the sugya there. But the truth is, I'm cheating a little bit in this, because what we're going to see in the Gemara is Rabbi Meir is going to take the position that if you rent an item and you use it in a way that the owner did not approve, then you're called a goslin. And then we're going to see the Rif, the Rosh, and the Rambam say, yeah, no one takes that seriously. We don't actually paskin that way. And not only that, we're going to see that even Rabbi Meir doesn't really believe that. And then, having seen that really this idea can be disposed of in probably 7 minutes, we're going to spend the rest of our time in the next few weeks resurrecting it in various ways and showing where we still have concerns about the intent of the owner. So the Gemara itself is going to fall by the wayside really quickly. But other Gemaras are going to jump in its place to support the idea that, in fact, just because you are renting something or borrowing something or you've even received it outright as a gift doesn't mean you can do whatever you want with it. So that's where we're going to go. We're going to have all sorts of fun in terms of applications. This will have applications for donor intent and tzedakah. This will have applications for something we'll talk about, I hope, today, use of physical objects like recordings and copying them when the original owner did not wish for them to be copied. So we'll talk about that. Correct. That's why I said it. So we'll have all sorts of stuff to say. It's just not going to be because of Rabbi Meir, as we'll see. Take a look at source Aleph, please, which is our lead Mishnah. This is a very perplexing Mishnah. Right? If you saw this Mishnah, you already know why we have a problem. Mishnah begins, you hired a donkey to take you on a mountain, or to take the donkey on a mountain, and instead you took it in the fields, or vice versa. You said it's going to be in the fields, and instead you took it on the mountain. Even if the length of the journey is the same, if it dies, you, the renter, are responsible for this donkey. You have to pay for it. Second case. You hired a donkey, this time apparently it's a female, to take it on a mountain, and instead you took it in the field, right? Because there's no other difference in the wording, just the halicha, halicho. So if it slips in the field, then you're exempt from liability. Whereas in Huchma, if it overheats, chayav, then you're going to be responsible. We've talked about this mission already before. I'm not going to belabor it. And then you see the reverse. You said it was going to be in the field, and in fact it's in the mountain. Im achlika chayav, then if it slips, then you're responsible. If it overheats, then you're potter. Im achmasamala chayav, da-da-da-da-da. So the Gemara wants to know, I don't understand, you gave me the same case twice. Right? The same case twice. You rented a donkey, you said you were going to take it in place X, and instead you took it in place Y, and it got damaged. Why is it that the first time round you just gave me a flat rule, chayav, and then you restated it, and you gave me all these different distinctions? Maishna resha de lo kamaflig, maishna seba de kamaflig. Why is it in the resha you didn't make any distinctions at all? And now suddenly you have in the same mishnah. So the Gemara gives you a variety of answers, but we're focusing on Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan Hamani, Rabbi Meir he. The Kalamavir al Dasha Balabais Nikra Gazlan. Rabbi Bergman already dealt with some of the other issues with this Mishnah. We're focusing on Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that if you violate the position, the intent of the Balabais, you are called a Gazlan, you are called a thief. And so he says the Risha is the view of Rabbi Meir, not the Seifa, which makes all sorts of distinctions depending on how things went wrong. But Rabbi Meir simply says, I don't care how things went wrong. It doesn't matter how things went wrong. You didn't do what you said you were going to do with it, what the owner thought you were going to do with it. And therefore, Gazlan, therefore, Chayev, and it doesn't even matter that it's a 10-meal trip that we don't care about. Then you look at the Rif on our Mishnah in source base. Amar Yochanan Hamani Rabbi Meir Hida Amar Kamavar Adas Valabayis Nikra Gazlan, and he quotes you a Brisa, because the Gemara goes through something I didn't bring, which we're going to have to see eventually, which is how do you know this is Rabbi Meir's position, and it gives you various sources to try to show that Rabbi Meir held this way. So he brings you one of them. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer Bishim Rabbi Meir Hanosin Dinar La'ani Likoch Lo Chaluk. You give a coin to a pauper to buy clothing, but a specific kind of clothing, a chaluk, tunic, Le'ikach Lo Talis. So he doesn't get to acquire instead this other type of clothing called a talis. Doesn't mean the religious article, it means clothing. And vice versa. Talis Le'ikach Lo Chaluk. Mipnei Shemavir Aldeito Shabalabayis. He's not allowed to use it to purchase something else because when you gave it to him, you said, I want you to buy X. And instead, he bought Y. We'll talk about that, God willing, not this week, but hopefully by the end of next week. Velesa L'Rabbi Meir. And he says, yeah, we don't follow Rabbi Meir. Sorry, the Rabbi Meir is not a thing. And there's another riff about this on Daf. I think it's Chaf Amud Aleph. I brought you the one that was here. Chaf Amud Aleph, the riff. The Rush as well in Source Gimel. Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan Hamani Rabbi Meir He Damar Kal Maver Adaito Shabal Abayis Nikra Gazlan. Velesel the Rabbi Meir, and he also says, yeah, we don't actually follow Rabbi Meir's view either. The Chinami Hadesanya Magbas Purim Lepurim Medatik and Medaver. Another of the pieces that's brought in the Gemara, trying to figure out how you know that Rabbi Meir says that you're called a Gazlan if you divert something, if you deviate from the instructions. So he says Purim collection money has to go for Purim Vei Medatik and Medaver, but we're not going to take an accounting. And then the Oni is the what is he not allowed to use with it, and so on. Veles al Rabbi Meir, he quotes you that case about the Purim money, and he says, again, we don't follow Rabbi Meir. Detravayu b'chatayim b'shaychu, because both of those cases are the same fundamental point, which is you're not allowed to deviate from what the owner said, even though one is a rental case and one is a gift. Rabbi Gamliel svir lan demekil, we take the lenient view. And the Rambam as well, in source Dalid, the Rambam, when he codifies our Mishnah, doesn't codify our Mishnah. He skips the Resha. Hasachar eschamor lalicha b'harva lalicha b'bika imhuchlika pater av bishavar das balabayis imhuchma chayev. Right, he goes into all the distinctions that you find in the Sefer. He pretends the Resha didn't exist, and it's generally understood that that's because he's not paskening like Rabbi Meir. So we have Rabbi Meir taking the position Nikra Gazlan, and then we have everybody else saying, sorry, we don't pasken that way. By the way, this is something I'm going to come back to, but I want to just say it because I realized that in my wording I could have misled you. I presented the conditions of use, or the anticipated conditions of use, in two different ways in the course of this conversation. At one point I said, you told him you were going to do X. And at one point I said, the instructions of the Balabais, like when he gives the tzedakah money. We will distinguish between where you, the recipient of the item, said, this is what I plan, and where the owner of it said, this is what you're going to do. Because obviously there will be distinctions to make in that regard. Okay, questions on what we've said so far?
Is yes. The whole discussion about whether the Chayav Pater or allowed to and how that's included in discussions, or is it connected?
Connected. Yeah.
So if I'm not Pater, I'm allowed to. If I'm not Pater, I'm allowed to, they could do it.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean connected that way. No, the answer is it is entirely possible that you're not supposed to do this. And yet, you're still not going to be liable for it. That's what I mean. So Zedne and Nebuzel Ochaser will come into this. I'm not planning on going into it in great length, but one of the points that does come out of this conversation is the Midas Sedom question. What if the owner stipulated it can be used only in this way, but it really doesn't change anything for him? He's not even going to endanger the item. So do we care? So that piece of it does come in. Also within Zenev as Alachaser, we make a distinction between that which is up for rent or sale and that which is not up for rent or sale. And therefore, even if my use doesn't take anything from him in terms of damaging the item, but he loses the opportunity to rent it out, right? So that will also come into this somewhat. Okay. So it took me a long time to put this together in terms of figuring out how to view this, because I went into it from various different angles and they weren't working until I came out with the following formulation. There are three different levels of deviation from the prescribed use of an item. There is deviating in a relatively minor way. There is deviating in a major way, and then there is deviating in the middle. The one that is the most minor is Rabbi Meir's case, where the owner told you that he wanted you to The owner told you that he wanted you to use the item in a particular way, and I'm saying the owner right now, but said he wanted you to use the item in a particular way, and you deviate from it in a minor way, not a way that's going to damage it, not a way that anybody would think would be terrible, and so on. That's your first case. Your opposite extreme is no one said anything to you. However, you rented an item and you use it in a way that is so obviously irresponsible that nobody would ever stomach their use of the item in this way. That's the opposite extreme. So your first case, where you deviate in a minor way, is where Rabbi Meir says Goslin and everybody else says don't worry about it. The major way, everybody is going to say you absolutely cannot do that. And then the intermediate way is where it's an unapproved use, which is not directly harmful, but it is unapproved. Okay? So on the one side, you have unapproved non-harmful. At the other end, the first case is unapproved non-harmful. Well, no. You have minor, unapproved, and let me say it this way. It's going to become more clear as we go through it in a minute, because we're going to see a source that makes this more clear, but I want to see if I can do it as a structure first and then see it inside. The first one is going to be where you deviate from the prescribed use in a relatively minor way. Focus on that piece of it. In other words, it's a minor deviation is what I'm trying to say. The second type of case is where it's a major deviation and dangerous and no one would ever think this is a good idea. And then the intermediate is going to be where it's more of a deviation. That's really going to be the distinction between the first and the third case. First case is minor deviation, and third case is going to be more significant one. Okay. So our first case is where you deviate, again, in a relatively minor way. And Rabbi Meir, again, says, Goslin. So, Rav Zalman Achemya Goldberg, in an article, and you can see it's volume 6 of Tchumen, that I brought you in Source Vav, says that what happens here is, in Rabbi Meir's view, a reservation of rights. He distinguishes between two different ways to understand why there will be a limit on my use of the item. One way you could look at it is that the owner who rented it to me for particular uses and kept other uses for himself. When you see a sign on something, a label on something saying all rights reserved, right? Or when someone rents it to you and says you're not allowed to copy this, they're retaining certain rights for themselves. The fact that I rented it to you meant you're allowed to use it. It doesn't mean that you're allowed to use it in every way possible, right? That's the idea. So, and we understand that intuitively. Meaning, in all business, right? Someone rents a car to me. Forget our discussions about mountains and fields or whatever it is. They don't intend for me to sell the car. Right? That's sort of a given. They don't intend for me to spray paint it. Right? Certain rights are explicitly limited in the contract. That's one way to look at it. We're going to see a second way to look at it, which is tnai, which is to say, it's not about reserving rights. It's about a condition. Saying that, I am renting you the item on condition that you will only use it this way and not use it the other way. The difference is that if it's a condition, then that means that the rental is disqualified. It's invalidated when I violate the terms of the agreement. It was never rented at all. So therefore,
No matter how minor.
So it appears, although we're going to modify that a little bit. But meaning... In the first formulation, that is reservation of rights. So let's say Eli rented me his car. And he said to me, and everybody understood, that I am allowed to drive the car in Ontario. However, he doesn't want the car to be taken across the border into the U.S. For whatever his reasons, doesn't matter. Don't take it into the U.S. I drove the car in Ontario. I drove the car to the Queenston-Lewiston Bridge. I drove across into the U.S. I then came back into Ontario. Am I allowed to keep on driving the car in Ontario? Yes. My use in the U.S. was illegal. It was against the terms of our rental. But there's nothing wrong with me driving in Ontario.
Once you broke the terms, the contract is void.
That's not so. Unless your contract says so, in which case what you're doing is making it a condition. The idea of reservation of rights is you're allowed to use it this way, you're not allowed to use it that way. If I make it a condition, though, then yes. That there's a condition that stipulates if you violate the terms of this agreement, the whole thing is void. At that point, then, the moment I take it into the U.S., it's not mine. I don't have the right to use it in Ontario either. It's over. I have no claim to it. You follow? That's the distinction between the two approaches. So I brought you, first of all, a link in Hay. I've mentioned this before, but I'm really pushing it because I think it's really important. SOMET has a magnificent database available where you can get online, cut and pasteable and everything else, everything from the Hebrew of encyclopedia, the medical encyclopedia of Dr. Steinberg, to Tchumen, to Asya, to a whole bunch of stuff on Chosh and Mishpat. It's all available there at that website. And when I signed up, it was like a year and a half ago, I think, and it was 70 shekel or something a year. It was some absurd joke of a price. If anybody ever wants to do anything with these sparim, they should be. I don't get a commission for this. I'm not. It's mind blowing that this is available and available so cheap, and I highly recommend it. So that's my pitch. Okay. But look at Rav Zalman Nechemya, who I was able to cut and paste as opposed to retype, thanks to Tzomet, yes. He says. He's talking about the issue of copying physical recordings. And here I will explain what Ezra already noted in the beginning when I said it then, which is this is not the discussion of intellectual properties and downloading MP3s. This is talking about where someone has a physical item that I'm going to use in a particular way. When I first gave Shiurim on the issue of copying things, it was back when you had to copy it from a physical item, and this was actually relevant. The whole new raft of issues surround downloading things and emailing them around and putting them on a server, because now there's no physical item that you're using. It's simply emulation of bits and bytes that were the original pattern. No, I copy that. I copy the thing.
Spiritual.
When you email me something, right? You're emailing me. You're emailing me effectively a pattern that is going to be emulated on my computer,
right.
But it's not a physical item. It's not a physical item that's actually being sent. There isn't a
cassette,
which was a hard item.
But I was copying it magnetic coding from one cassette to another cassette.
Correct, but I had to use that physical item in order to do it. I had to use the original copy in order to do it. In
so
this
email
case,
the photocopy.
Meaning you have to open up the book in order to copy it.
Yes.
So emailing the photocopy would be what?
Would not be this. Emailing a photocopy, making the photocopy would be this. But you make a photocopy in order to email it, and the owner of the book didn't want it, that's an issue. This issue goes way, way back. They talked about this. If I borrow someone's Sefer and I, write over the text, is that allowed or not allowed? And the answer is, well, if he says no, then it's not allowed. And that's part of this discussion. What if it's Torah? It's not really his, and so forth. But take a look at the Rav Zalman Nechemya on copying a cassetta.
To me, it seems to be a confusion between the information and the chumrah, the chomer.
Yes.
I don't see it. I mean, the information, it doesn't matter what level of physicality it has.
But it has no physicality.
Let's say
you heard somebody singing. Okay, you heard somebody singing, and you said, I heard them singing, I know the song now, and I'm going to perform the song. There's been no physical item that you have taken. That's what modern intellectual property is like.
I'm only interested in the information. I don't care about taking it.
Yes, but you needed to use it in order to get there.
What?
You needed to use it. Sorry?
But if somebody does it,
it depends where
that's intellectual. But that's intellectual property law. It's not this. I'm going a further afield than I intended to.
Okay. Yeah.
That's intellectual property law. That's not this. There are issues there. And if you want, we can have Shira on that at some point. But it's different from this. So he says, Ubira Dover. Nira Shisova Rabbi Meir, Shekeven Shinasan La Ani Liknos Haluk, Harezek Yilu Nasan La Ani Adinar Bishiyur, Shalanasan El La Inyan Kinyas Haluk. He says, when Rabbi Meir is saying that if you give the pauper a dinar and say, use it to buy a haluk, you have reserved the right to other uses of this dinar. Shiur means you have like shiurin, right? Shirayim. for those who would say it that way. You are retaining, you, the donor of the dinar, are retaining certain rights and saying it's not for use that way, it's only for use this. He didn't give him the right to buy anything else. It belongs to the balabayas. That right belongs to the balabayas. V'nimtza sha'ani gozel the balabayas is a dinar im kona davar acher. You're stealing from the balabayas if you use it to buy something else. Aval ein habir shenasan lo bitnai. It's not a condition. Al menasha lo yikne davar zulas chaluk. That I'm giving it to you on condition that you not buy something other than the chaluk. V'im kana avar latanai. V'nisgala shelo nasan lo. Such that in the event that you break the condition, use it in a legal way, it turns out that he never gave it to you in the first place. The gezel hu biyadani, and now that is considered stolen. How do you know it's not a tanai? Shemitaras tanaihu imken yitzdarach tanai kafu l'Rabbi Meir. Then you would have to do a tanai kafu, right? All those annoying rules that you learned from B'nei Gad, B'nei Reuven about how a condition is supposed to be structured in order for it to be valid. If you do this, then X. And if you don't do this, then Y, right? And you have to do the positive before the negative. And all of those different structures, he says, that clearly doesn't apply here. No one says that that's the way this works, that if you give it to the pauper and you didn't say it doubly, right, then he's allowed to do whatever he wants with it. It's not a tanai. V'asha kosev Tosfos in Kiddushin. Sheyesh dvarim she'ein tzarach tanai kafel. Granted that Tosfos writes that not every condition has to actually have that level of a specific structure. Kemo, nosin esnog l'chaveru amanas l'achzir. You gave somebody the esrog to use on the third day of Sukkos, right? But you didn't say, if you keep this and use it and then give it back to me, then it's fine. And if you do not give it back to me, then this is invalid, right? That doesn't now disqualify the tanai of, I'm only giving this to you so that you give it back to me. Shaddai begilui milsa, it's enough that everybody can tell what this is. Ukigon mocher nechasa baldas lemesak l'eretz Yisrael, like somebody who sells off his property because he's planning to make aliyah, right? So we don't require a tanai kafel on that. Nonetheless, jumping down to the third to last line, it's hard to apply that to the case of the pauper to say that an onlooker would know you only gave it to him for him to buy a chaluk and otherwise you consider it to be theft. You weren't that serious. No one would know you were serious. And especially if you're talking about renting a donkey to him to take on a mountain, he took it in the field. Shana's a gazlan to Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir calls you a gazlan for that. The vade kashalomer shanan sahadi shlo hisker lo chamor elibit nash yerlicho bahar. It's hard to say that people would just assume that you rented him the donkey on condition that he's only going to take it on a mountain. You know, the other way around is easier because we assume mountains are worse than fields. It's easier to assume that when dealing with you rented it for a field. But he says, it's not, you can't really say Gilui Milsa here. Rav Zalmachemi's position is, it is a retention of rights. Whereas Rav Naftali Bar Ilan, in a response in Chumen Zayin, in Sur Zayin, says no. He says, of course this is, in fact, a Tanai. He says, of course it's Tanai, and he says, I'll prove it to you. He says, if you take a look at Zayin, here the thing is, Zayin, Shemakom Lachadesh Yishir, he says, instead of telling me this chiddush, that you have retained certain rights for yourself, where it's not as though you're retaining a right that you're going to use, right? I am the owner of a cassette. I rent it to Ellie. Yeah, you're my partner in crime today. I rent the cassette to Ellie, and I say to him, you're allowed to play the cassette, but you're not allowed to copy the cassette. I'm retaining the right for myself. Remember, Naftali Bar Ilan says, I don't understand. Now, what am I doing with this right to copy it while he's holding the cassette? What do you mean I retained the right to copy it? I can't. He's holding on to the cassette. It's hard to believe that this is actually what retaining a right looks like. He says, it's chidush ha-menugad lechlal sha'adam einu mishayir b'yado davar shein b'mamash. He says, not only that, this is not substantive. What does that mean? You can't point to a right to copy it. He says, no. He says, come on. And in Lo Makor Nosav, he says, there's no other place where you find this idea. So he says, I'd rather take a structure which we are familiar with from agreements, which is a tanai. It is indeed, he argues, a condition. And he says, yes, granted, there was no time before Rosh. You didn't say it explicitly as a tanai. Nonetheless, we think that it's obvious that everybody understands that that's what this is. That's of Naftali Bar Ilan's statement. As we're going to see, most adopt the model that it is in fact shiur. That's Rav Zalman Nechemi's model. That it's retention of rights. Complaints of Naftali Bar Ilan notwithstanding. We tend to assume that that's what this is. Rav Sami, you were going to say?
I think I was mostly echoing what Naftali Bar Ilan's points were. But also, is it clear that in the situation of shir, you should be a gazan for violating that and be chayav and onsen?
So that's my second point. My second point is, how far is Rabbi Meir really willing to go here when he says, you're a goblin if you do this? I mean, really? So already we noticed the language in the Gemara, in the Gemara with Rabbi Meir was nikra goblin. Nikra doesn't quite mean the same thing as that's gezel. Worth noting. But Rav Avihu Schwartz wrote an article, which I happened across from the Gush. Or at least his article from the Gush. I don't know if it's from the Gush. Yes? Okay. In Source Ches, where he argues that Rabbi Meir would make life really, really difficult for people if he believed that it makes you a thief. He says the Gemara tries to find what the source is. Where do you know that Rabbi Meir expresses this idea that he's a gazlan? But it doesn't really discuss the chiddush itself, that someone is a gazlan for this. Misvara devar of nirim berurim. Logically, it seems clear. Kasher balabayis matir lemanduhu. Lihishtamesh mamamono betanayim mugdarim. When the owner of something permits somebody, a renter, a shaliach, anybody, to use his property in specific terms, and the other one deviates from those terms, you're using somebody else's property against the halacha, and that calls you, that makes you a thief. Da'aka. But he says, here's the problem. Shagdara nuksha kazu asiyala hakshos ma'od akum olam kalkali takin. This is going to make business really hard if you're going to do that. You have a shaliach. You sent him and said, I want you to bring my stuff there and sell it in this way, right, in the marketplace. Shaliach zakuk l'chovash pe'ulam mesuyam b'nyan eshlichut. He says, your shaliach needs a certain freedom of agency here. What if he finds a way to sell your stuff, but it's not quite the way you said? Not to the person you said, not exactly in the same terms you said, you stipulated. Socher, a renter. Mitzapeh avhu l'mida shal gemishut b'chlon ogeh l'shimush b'mesh ha-sachar. A renter expects a certain degree of flexibility in terms of his ability to use the item that he is renting from you. He may have certain rules, but how precise are you going to be? V'achin pa'amim rabos mizgalos v'en ha-socher l'maskir machlokos b'nikudazu. He says, in fact, we do get into trouble. This happens all the time, and he goes on to present cases. I assume he used misgalos with the ayin from mezgalo ribnatosh. I assume that's where he got the use of it with the ayin, because that's not the usual gilui. He doesn't usually have an ayin, but you do find that use. I assume that's what he was doing, but I didn't think about it before to be able to look it up. It just occurs to me now. Okay, in fact he quotes you the Maharil. Take a look at Source Test. Maharil is dealing with this principle, and he says, "V'shoa shalomi das." When we say that if you borrow someone's property without the knowledge of the owner, de nikra gazlan. V'chein amavir al das balabayis or das bailin. Also, if you deviate from what the owner intended, l'chad man da'amar within the view of Rabbi Meir, k'meduma li shapir shu rabosenu din gazlan yeshlo v'lo de'ka'avar b'lo signov. We give him the status of a gazlan in that he will have certain responsibilities, but he's not actually in violation of lo signo. That's way too much of a stretch. That's going back to the case of Shor Shlomida. Okay. So he quotes you this Maharil as evidence. This guy is a thief type. He will have certain thief type rules, but not that he actually is a bona fide thief. He also says this may fit Rashi, which I brought you here in Source Yud, on Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says, Nikra Gazlan. Rashi says, V'kamale birshu sei lishayev b'chol onseha, and v'sefer Rabbanan. He says, the item now is in the rishus of the renter, and he will be responsible for all onsen. In other words, he assumes responsibility. If you're going to use it your way, you're assuming responsibility for it like a thief. Not that you are a thief, but certain rules are now going to pertain. So Rabbi Meir becomes moderated somewhat in this regard. Jerry?
So the issue only is if there's a damage.
Yes.
If there's no damage, if you took something, you did it in the wrong place, you gave it back, then the only question is whether with Rabbi Meir you violated some moral thing. But otherwise there's nothing.
Well,
if you give it back.
If you give it back and it's intact, you have no liability.
Right. Which? What's Rav Meir saying in that? In other words, he's
that if it is damaged, then you're a thief.
No, but if it's not damaged,
you got away with it.
You just got away with it.
I mean, but Amlamakum is a thing, but yes. But there's nothing to make you pay. So you're going to say?
Look at the Ma'aril and perhaps Rashi, the change is in the Shmira liability, meaning that changes regardless of whether it's damaged. It's just.
Okay, but Shmira liability is only going to be an issue if something happens. If nothing happens.
But in Nikra Gazla, that part is really changes the minorities, regardless of whether it's damaged.
Nikra Gazla. Right.
So far is your Shmira liability.
Right.
Are there any other ramifications of being called a Gazlan?
Possibly. I think we are going to get to. I seem to remember I have in here a source that talks about whether you'd be pasaleidus as a result of doing this. That will be a classic. I believe I have a source in here on this.
According to Rav Meir.
Yes.
So there would be something, even though there is no damage.
Right.
So how does that work with the cases further, like the Oni case? That's not a question of liability. It's a question of can you use it for something else.
Well, yes,
using it.
Yes and no, because by the fact that you use it, you create liability, because now the item is damaged, so to speak.
I mean, if he buys not a Hulk, the point is you owe him money back? It's also that you can't use it without a Hulk, is it?
See, the difference between the case of the Ani and the case we're dealing with is that in the rental case, it goes back intact to the owner.
Right.
And as long as that is met, there is nothing for you to pay. Yes, you violated what you were supposed to do. Yes, that was an act of gezel. Yes, gezel or quasi-gezel. You're going to have to klap al-chet for it. You're going to have to do tshuva for it. But at the end of the day, there's nothing for you to pay. Because the stipulation was, get this back to me, and you did. In the Ani case, there was never an anticipation that the money was going back to the original owner for us to now say, you have to pay him for that. There was instead an anticipation of the money is going to go for this particular function, and it didn't. And since it can't now, because now the money's gone, you're going to have to pay him back.
So you're saying when the Gemara says you can't buy a Hulk, it means that you do get paid back?
I think so. You're guilty of having stolen the money. Again, assuming you take Goslin for real, and not just that you're Chayav and Onsin, but I think...
But it's hard to apply
Chayav Onsin in the Ani case.
That's exactly my question. Right. The Gemara thinks it's not just about Onsin, it's about whether you're allowed to or not.
Right. So what you're saying is, if I understand you correctly, the fact that we are willing to extend this to the gift case
right.
and the Tzedakah case
right.
says more is at stake than just Chayav Onsin.
Correct.
Okay. Now that I hear. Okay. The last piece within this position of Rabbi Meir is to moderate the Chachamim now. In other words, we've pointed out Rabbi Meir's position could be taken as Tanai, or could be taken as Shir. Shir or Tanai, the way I had presented it. We have pointed out that Rabbi Meir's position would really make commerce very difficult, and therefore it may be argued he doesn't really mean you're a thief. You have certain legal statuses that come with theft. Moderating the view of the Chachamim, even according to the Chachamim, l'chatchila, you're not allowed to do this. It's not that when the Chachamim say, now you're not called a Gazlan, that doesn't mean go have fun as long as it doesn't get broken. Rav Zalman Nechemya says this in Source Yid Aleph from that same article. He says, Haresha das Chachamim, sha'af b'makom shebevadai ha'bailim makbidim shlo yaskir asocher, even in a case where we know for sure that they're makbid, Mikomakom ain't dunim ki ilu shier hamaskir la'atzmo le'inyan shalo yaskir ha'socher. We don't say that it's as though the Maskir left it for himself, left the right for himself. And he says, when we say that it's asur lechatchila to do this, it appears that there is an isur, even if there was no shiur at all. In other words, what he's saying is the chachamim say we don't accept the shiur principle. Well, then why can't I just do whatever I want? The answer is that there is some sense of lechatchila, you do what you were told to do or what you said you were going to do. And the Pesach Hoshen takes it as a given. As halacha, I brought it for you in source you base. Le'enyin lechatchila nere she'enach geminim amaskir hizgir le'ezam alacha maskiro shazokhar amalu shu tzarechum alacha zu. That's what I had alluded to before. Doesn't matter who said it. Lechatchila, you're not allowed to deviate from what was agreed upon initially. Yeah?
Isn't it an obvious thing that you never know that, like, you don't want to take him into play for it. We have like halacha, but halacha only the name of Noda, and if you have a sign, like for repeat, and whatever the sign is made, that's what's for them. Like, why would it be a halacha means to play things? I guess that's about how he said something. I have to do it, but I don't want to, don't take him.
Right, to which the answer would be, if you don't believe that the Tanai actually has any standing at all, then no, you're not bound by it. But I think, to me, it's the other way around. It's not because of the Tanai. I think it's because of Sheves Yisrael Lo Yasu Avla. In other words, you said you were going to do something, do what you said. Don't deviate from it. I would take it as on that basis. Go back to our Tarometh discussion. So this is all within the first type of a case, the first poll, which was where you deviate, but your deviation is a relatively minor deviation. Now let's look at the other end of the spectrum, which is where you deviate in a way that everybody agrees is directly harmful to the property. So I gave you the Tosefta in Bav Mitzia, which gives you Hasocha Bayis Mechavero, you rented a house from somebody, Mamid Bo Rechaim Shal Chamor, Lo Rechaim Shal Yad. You're allowed to set up a donkey-driven mill, but not a hand mill. Lo Yirate Vagav of Yayin, Mimesh Toenes Haksalim. Don't store wine on top of it, it's bad for the walls. Yirate like a martef, a wine cellar. Lo Yigad Bo Tarnagolin, don't raise chickens, or I don't know, roosters maybe, in it. Mimesh Mechat Chetin Es Hakoslim, because they peck at the walls and, you know, they'll dig out the mortar, it's bad for the walls. These are things you should not do. These are just taken as obvious. And the Shulchan Aruch in Yudalid codifies it, saying the following. Sachar Stam, it's talking about a donkey. You rented a donkey without any specification of how much weight you're allowed to put on it. So how much weight can you use? Whatever's considered normal. If you go 1/30th more, thank you for clarifying what 1/30th means. I'm assuming this was because of the Magav and the power. Yeah, I assume so. This is very funny. It's very funny to me. The umeso nishbara, and then it is damaged as a result, dies as a result. Chayav. Okay, I said as a result. Maybe I'll come back to that. But he says you're liable. You can't go beyond. However, the very fact that we give a 1/30th cap tells us that deviating in a very minor way is not a problem. The Rambam brings this in Hilchos Chirus, the Shulchan Aruch you just saw. The Eben HaEzel, Rav Zalman Meltzer, explains this principle in Suras Tezvav. Umad de ba'inon echad mishloshim. Why 1/30th? Ein ze mishum de amrinan de bashir zech shahosif mesa al yedei zeh. Don't misinterpret this to say adding 1/30th is sufficient to kill the animal. Adding 1/31st is not sufficient to kill the animal. That's not so. Ela de pachos mishir zeh ein zu hosafa. The point is that less than 1/30th is not considered significant to the Balabayas. He wouldn't view that as a deviation. When he rented it to you, to put it this way, you go to the airport, and the airport says the limit on your bag is 50 pounds, right? So there's an understanding, hypothetically, there's an understanding, depending on who's working the counter, there's an understanding that 50.1 pounds is still 50 pounds. Yeah? Wow. I want that counter. 50.1 is the same as 50. We meant 50 in general. We didn't, you know, you come in and you give me 55, I'm going to say no. That's no good. But your number that you give is a general number. It's not a digital precise, you know, to the third decimal place type of a thing. So if you went within 1/30th, that was what the owner meant in the first place. Volodami Laroa. It's not like the case that they give where you have a shepherd who has the sheep for the owner, and he puts his staff down on the sheep, or his bag down on the sheep. That's a binary case. The shepherd is not allowed to put his stuff on the sheep. And he can't say, well, it was just the staff. It doesn't matter. The rule is nothing goes on the sheep. But you rented the thing for carrying burdens. As long as you're within 1/30th, the owner is indeed good with that idea. And of course, all the poskim who deal with this say the threshold amount is going to depend on the case. Right? That's always going to be true. Meaning, we're using 1/30th for donkey loads, but that's not a constant percentage. It's going to vary based on what you're talking about. The other question that comes up when you're dealing with this case is somebody who deviates in a way that is directly harmful. Does he have to pay rent for the use? If the item is harmed, is he obligated to pay rent for this use? In other words, I rented your donkey. I used it in a way that was illegal. The threshold amount that everybody puts on the donkey is one case of beer. And I put 10 cases of beer on the donkey, and the donkey collapsed. And it was a very happy donkey, but the donkey collapsed. Beer was everywhere. So the question that you have to ask is, when I pay you, am I paying you for your collapsed donkey? Well, for the beer. It's my beer. Am I paying you rent for the donkey? Am I paying you rent for a donkey that carries one case? Am I paying some amount that you'd have to pay if you wanted to rent a donkey that would carry 30 cases? What am I paying? So here you have to see. Gemara Bava Kama Tzadi Zayin Amid Aleph.
But we're assuming that the donkey made it.
No, the donkey did not make it. The donkey collapsed.
Is that dead?
Yes, let's say.
Okay, so then wouldn't you be responsible to pay for the value of the donkey?
So let's see the Gemara. Let's see the Gemara. Sorry?
Nothing. I think it might be not sure this is
so. Let's see this first, and then talk about that. Itmar, hatokes v'nasa shechaveru v'asa b'malacha. You took charge of somebody else's boat. Okay, it's okay. You weren't asking permission. You took the boat. You did malacha with it. Omar Rav. Rav says ratza schara nota, ratza pchaza nota. I underline them because I insert their names into the Gemara to show who's saying what. So Rav says. That it's up to the landlord, the owner of the boat. He said, the boat lord. He says, if you want, you're able to take payment for rent. If you want, you can take payment for whatever damage was done to the boat. Either way is legitimate. Basically, the renter, not the non-renter, the user, this is the thief, is yada wala tachtona. He has the lower hand. He will have to pay either for damage or have to pay rent, whatever the owner wants. Shmuel says no. All you can take is whatever damage was done. He's not a renter. He's a thief. He damaged it. So take the damage. He didn't damage it. You got your boat back. That's all. So Amar Rav Papa lo pligi. Rav Papa says, and this goes back a little bit towards what David had asked about with his enenev zelo chasen. Amar Papa lo pligi. Rav Papa says there's no machlokas here. Ha David la agra. Rav says you can demand rent if you want, where it's a boat that is up for rent. So by taking your boat, he prevented you from renting it out. Huh? Whereas Shmuel, it's not up for rent, so therefore all you have is depreciation. The Iba is Ema, or if you want, we could say the following. Hava David Laagra. Both cases are where it's up for rent. Huh, but Rav, who said you could claim either one, the Nachas Le'adaita De'agra, is where the guy was not a thief initially. He went in thinking he's going to rent the boat. And then he used it, you know, in some way that was not approved. The Baha, whereas Shmuel, who says, no, you just take depreciation, the Nachas Le'adaita De'gazlanusa, is where you went in as a thief. And based on this, the Rambam writes, and it's also brought in Choshen Mishpat Shin Samach Yimel, source Yitzayin, Hatoki Sinash Chaver Vasa Bamalacha. If you take the boat, If it is not used for rental normally, so he's taking Rav Papa's approach. He says, if it's not made for a sachar, not up for sachar, shaman kama pachsa umishalin. So then you just pay for depreciation. Vim hi asuya lasachar. If, on the other hand, it is made for renting, if it is set up for renting, then he takes the by yisema. He says, im yarad labasara schirus. You went without it being as a rental. It's up for rent, but you stole it. The owner can claim whatever he wants. However, if you went in as a thief, then no senapchas, then you only give the depreciation. And so too in any similar case. So that what we're saying is, if it's not up for rent, you just pay for depreciation. If it is up for rent, and you started as a renter, the owner can claim rent if he wants, but if you didn't come in as a renter, you came in as a thief, then back to square one. It's like where it's not up for rent, you just pay depreciation. Clear? Okay, Rav Sammy, how did you want to make this fit with
tonight? I was just thinking that if you think it's not, then I'm afraid I never actually rented the thing, therefore like that you have to pay for it, whereas if you think it's a shear, then you did rent it, it's just now, from like here on, you're violating it, so it's more likely you'll have to pay.
So you're saying this is an argument against Rav Naftali Bar Ilan?
Meaning, if you think that you have to pay, then that would be...
Which?
Seems like you did.
Yeah. Okay, is that an argument against
I'm arguing that.
Okay.
I think that you can do it, but I think that's how I might look at it.
Interesting. And I want to think it through, but I think it's interesting. Okay. So, now we've discarded or dealt with the two poles. Where you deviated in a minor way, we dealt with that. We said it's theft, quasi-theft, whatever that is, according to the mayor, the chum don't want you to do it. But if you did it, you get away with it. The other end of the spectrum, you used it in a way that deviates very seriously, so everybody agrees it's unacceptable, and then what you will have to pay depends on if it was up for rent, did you enter as a renter, did it get damaged? How did it get damaged? Those questions. What about in the middle? So it's an unapproved use, but it's not obviously harmful. That's what we're talking about. So this is indeed illegal under Shlichus Yad. And here, I come to the source that I mentioned to you, I referred you to at the beginning, that I said was going to be very helpful. Source Yiches. This is a psak din that I found from the Netanya Beis Din. What happened was, I was struggling, as part of, in general, putting this together, trying to figure out the difference between sholeach yad in someone else's property and mavir al das bala bayis. Why aren't they the same thing? Mavir al das bala bayis, I used his property in a way he did not approve. Sholeach yad in someone else's property, I used his property in a way he did not approve. Why is it that everybody is willing to call it shlichus yad, but not willing to call it mavir al das bala bayis? So I found this psak din. That offered a suggestion to explain the difference between Rabbi Meir's case of Mavir al das bala bayis and Sholeach Yad. V'ahevdel bein Mavir al das bala bayis she'eino gazlan lebein shol shlomi das shehu gazlan nirash shoshona b'mahut ki ha-Mavir al das bala bayis amnam osa b'mamon bala bayis davar shelo kibel al zereshut. He says in Rabbi Meir's case where you are Mavir al das bala bayis, that means you're using his property in a way that you didn't get permission to use, right? Mikol makom ekronit balabayis marhirshal alatsa shivush b'mamon. But fundamentally, he did let you use his property, just not in this way. Lachin hagam sheshina me'adav shekibel l'vershus. So granted that you didn't do what you got permission to do, right, you took it to plow in the wrong place. But that deviant use that you're making of the item, it is not a fundamental change in your being granted the right to use it and the type of use that the owner gave it, which is plowing. Because if it's a healthy animal, It's okay for plowing. Hein bebeka, hein bahar, wherever it's going to be. Lochem b'shinoi zeh she'eino b'mahus ha'yi'ud eino nikra gazlan. So that doesn't make you a thief. Uchmochein b'shomer shamasir l'shomer. Ditto if someone gave you something to watch and you gave it to somebody else. Eino b'shanemei ha'yi'ud shafaylem ye'eid l'mamon. You're not changing the fundamental purpose and destination of this property. Leo shemur etzal acherim, which is that it should be guarded. Lochein kol shamasir l'ben, it should say das, that's a typo on their site. Ein zeh shinoi b'mahut. As long as you gave it to a bardas, you haven't changed things fundamentally. You're not a thief, you're not a posheya. Avol, shoal shalomidas, but if you borrow something without permission, the shlichus yad case, yesh kan shinoi b'mahus hayi'ud shal hamamon. He says, in that case, there is a fundamental change in what this was for. Shenodol hamamon letzarcho. You're taking it for your purposes without the permission of the owner. I don't remember if the bold there is mine or not. Right? In the case of Mavir al Das Balabayis, he said it's for plowing, you're using it for plowing, you just change some of the circumstances. He did allow you to rent with it to plow with his animal. And so too, he gives money for you to use in buying a talis. He gave you the money to use to improve your lot. But in the Shol Shlomida's case, he never gave you permission to use it at all. Now that you're using it, it's a fundamental change in it, and that also makes you a thief. I thought that was a really interesting way to present this. I'm still thinking it through, but I thought it was an interesting way to present it. Yeah?
Just to clarify, so this only is my colleague when you didn't get any permission to use it altogether.
Yes, that's the shlichus yad by definition, is that you didn't have permission to use it altogether, which, what we're going to see is, we apply to a case in which you deviate from his prescribed use in a way that's more significant than har dika. Correct. Okay. So, we only have 8 minutes, but I think we can still do this next chunk. I think it's a really important chunk. There are two views on why your use of the item is illegal. I sort of think you can take this back to Shear versus Tnai, although I'm not 100% sure. Tell me what you think. The simple view of why you're not allowed to use this item is you were not granted the right to manipulate the property in the way that an owner does, which I think obviously is like Rezam and Nechemia. That's going to be the Kilis Yaakov's position. The other view is the owner is still entirely in charge of the item. And he does not, and any rights that you have are not allowed to be wielded against the owner. You're not, it's an overarching thing. He gave you this item, he let you this item, he rented you this item, it may not be used in a way that harms him. Nafkamina, which we'll have to see next week, we're not getting to it this week, would be the following. He rents me a field, not a field. He rents me a storefront, okay? He has a chain of stores, produce markets. He decides, for whatever reason, he's not going to use one of them. He's going to rent it to me, thinking that I'm going to use it to sell watches. I choose to use it without any stipulation. He didn't stipulate what I could use it for. I decide I'm going to use it to sell produce.
No, it is stipulated in the case.
No, in the case I'm giving you right now. In the case I'm giving you right now, he did not stipulate. That's what I'm telling you. So in the event that that you tell me the Kilis Yaakov's approach, so I did nothing wrong. He rented me a storefront. He said I could use it to sell things. I'm selling things. However, I'm using it against the guy. I'm competing with him. So that will be, we'll talk about that case specifically I'm bringing here, but I just want to use that as an illustration to show the two different views. The first view is Kilis Yaakov. The second view is the Nesivos. Jerry.
No, sometimes people rent things out to people who will compete with them.
Okay, but I gave that as an illustration. I don't want to get bogged down in in the illustration. So the simple view is the Kilis Yaakov's view. You, the renter, the borrower, recipient, are an owner of the item now for certain uses and not others.
take a look at Kilas Yaakov in your test. I took the time to retype it because I think it's important. Be'inyan Schirus, Yesh La'ayin, Im Hukinyan Peros Lasocher, O She'enu Ala Shibud LaPeros. When it comes to renting something, does that mean that you acquired the produce? Or does it mean that you have a hold on it, an encumbrance on it, if you will, not really an encumbrance, for the sake of getting the produce? Vizela Shona Rambam, he quotes you the Rambam. Rambam writes in Hilchos Mechira. Makne Adam Haguf LePerosav. Beib Mecher, Beib Matana, Beib Matna Shchiv Mera. He says you could be Makne, assign to somebody else the field itself, not to give him the field, but to give him whatever it produces. Whether you do that via sale, whether you do it via gift, however you choose to do it. The Eze Makne Dover Shalom Bala Olam. That's not called giving him something that doesn't exist yet, where you say you can't make a Kenyan on something that doesn't exist. There is no produce yet. Shoya Guf Matsui Umakna Peros, because there is a physical field. Granted, you're not giving him the field. That's okay. Halamazadome, what's it like? Lasokha Bayas Asadala Khabero. It's like when you rent out a house or a field. Shalom Hikna Lo Aguf, Ela No Azaguf. You didn't actually give him the physical item, you just gave him use of the item. But notice what the Rambam has done. He has equated assigning to someone the produce from the field and renting them the field. So the Kilas Yaakov writes, Umashmi Lashonze, the Mechira LePeros, Uschirus Chad in Yanahu. Selling it for the produce, meaning selling him future produce, is the same thing as renting him the field. Tikanagu LePeros. You acquire the body of the field for this, to the extent that you're getting the peros. However, the Shamba Rambam Halachaches, what's the difference between buying the field for the sake of its produce only and renting the field? He says, if you're buying future produce from the field, you can choose to plant it, you can choose to just leave it. Who cares? You bought whatever produce it makes. If it makes nothing, you get nothing. But that's not true for a renter. You already saw this in the Gemara. That's not today. But in terms of Sugyan Bava Metzia, you're not allowed to say, I'm not going to plant that field. We'll talk about it. And also, a renter is not allowed to rent it out. But if you buy future produce of the field, you could also sell somebody the produce that it's going to produce. Nouns and verbs. So the Kilas Yaakov says that it's not quite the same, says the Rambam, when you buy future produce and when you rent the field, certain similarity to it, to the Kenyan, however, not quite the same in terms of the rights you receive. So he says, V'yesh lafareish, v'hadi chalok schirus mikona Kenyan peros, v'yanam elu, eno mishum shem chalukim v'yekar kniyasam. He says, what the Rambam is doing here is he's not distinguishing between the essential kinyan involved in renting a field versus buying future produce. Ela mishum shaloshon schirus mashma lofanim elu veikehisna shal ofen zeh hiskir ma'ar v'hainu kehisna shal ofen zeh hiskir mashenkin lashon mechira leperos mashma sheba meshen ogei leperos hukibaylim gomor lazos kirtzono. He says, schirus implies a certain relationship, and buying the produce implies a certain relationship. Schirus implies a relationship in which there is a condition of you're going to plant it, and this is what you're going to, this is what you're not going to do. Whereas, buying the future produce also implies here are the rights that you will have over it, here are the rights you will not have over it. You will have the right to the produce. You will have the right to sell that produce to somebody else. You will have the right to work the field, you'll have the right to not work the field. But you won't have the right to dig holes in the field, for example. Right? There are certain rights you get, certain rights you do not get. The Shaul Meshiv did this as well in Source Chaf, in a tshuva regarding copyright issues, and he, again, is like Razal Menachemia. I brought it for you in Source Chaf, and we'll conclude with him. He says, regarding a book that somebody wanted to copy and then sell, and he says, you can't do that. V'hine, kol d'varav t'muvim, d'zev v'adai, she'sefer chadash, she'matpis mechaber v'zacha, she'dvarav miskablum al-pnei tevel, p'shita she'yesh l'zchus b'zeh le'olam. He says, if somebody created a book, and people liked it, he says, of course the owner has a right over that book. And he says, you can't just decide you want to copy it. I brought it mostly because of what's coming next. He says, if you invent something, you patent a process, Eino Rashi Acher Lasoso below Rishuso. No one else is allowed to do it without your permission. Hare know that Shrabi Avram Yaakov Meharav Shav Sha'asa HaKeshbon B'Mashin Kol Yamav Kibel Scharav from the Tsar B'Worsha. He says, this fellow, I don't know who he was, came up with an adding machine. He came up with an accounting machine of some kind, and he got paid for it. The authorities paid him for it. His whole life he was paid for this. He says, if you can get that, if you can get a patent for an adding machine, you can certainly get property protections when it comes to your sefer. And he says, of course it has to be true. Of course you get his. Okay, so we're not going to see the Nesivos today, but we at least saw the Hiz Yaakov. So again, we saw the basic poles deviating in a minor way. Or the mayor says you can't do it. Chamsei lechatchila, you shouldn't do it. Deviating in a major way, in a way that's directly harmful to the property, everyone says it's not allowed. And the way you pay depends on whether you entered it as a renter, was it up for rent or not. And then in the middle, we have the position of Achilles Yaakov, which says that you are using rights that were not actually sold to you, and therefore you're going to have to pay for the damage that it causes. Let's talk about what else you'd have to pay for. We didn't actually get to that. But I still want to see next week the position of the Nesivos, which is indeed different from this. Two cases of Nafkamina between the two, and then we'll talk about paying for damages, what is your liability, and what about if the damage came from the non-approved use, didn't come from the non-approved use. We'll have to talk about all of those issues, God willing, next week. Shkaya.